Hello and welcome to the long overdue episode of the Geek Roulette Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Mike Spriegel.
And I'm the other host, John Lundquist. It's almost like there's been something going on lately in the world.
We may have been a little bit busy. I have a feeling everybody has been a little bit busy, and I don't even know where to start on this. I mean, let's just get the dumb stuff out of the way first. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. You know the whole spiel right there. So move past that real quick. John, what's your recommendation?
I'm going to recommend something. It's food, which, you know, is a good thing these days. Hot honey is what it's called. I found it. I don't know where I found it actually, but I ended up picking some up. I like it on peanut butter sandwiches, and it's basically, I could probably tell you what it is, I suppose, too. It's a spicy honey, in case you couldn't tell from the name of it.
Well, wait a minute. Hot honey is actually hot honey?
Oh, yes, baby. It is. It's super good on peanut butter sandwiches and, chicken and all sorts of stuff, and it is delicious, and you should go get yourself some hot honey. I got mine on Amazon, and it was cheap and affordable, but, you know, now with the apocalypse happening, who knows what's going on with it.
That's good. I appreciate your recommendation of hot honey.
Yes, short and sweet. Nice and simple. Tell
you what, you know what? I'm going to mirror you. I'm going to recommend food, too. I'm going to recommend Wendy's breakfast. Wendy's actually put out, started their breakfast menu nationwide over this past month, and it's good. I mean, as breakfasts go, rating the fast food places that do breakfast, I used to think White Castle was the best, but I find that most of them have slipped. And if you're saying, well, what's White Castle? No. Trust me. Their breakfast used to be good, but McDonald's is overproduced as their breakfast goes. Nothing tastes or feels natural in any of the food you eat there. But Wendy's, great stuff. One of the best is they have a honey butter chicken biscuit sandwich. Delicious. So if you're going to play the food recommendation game, I'll recommend giving Denny's breakfast a chance. Denny's, I will accept, of course, any, you know, promotional fees.
Wendy's, I think you just said Denny's.
You know, you're right. Fuck Denny's.
Denny's. But we'll take money from Denny's too, though. I mean, you know, hey, if you want to throw money at us, we're willing.
And then they'll pay us, and I'll be like, yeah, and go to Wendy's for breakfast. I'm like, that's not us.
Go get yourself a Grand Slam.
All right. Let's nail out some stuff. Now, arbitrary list. Based on the current landscape of the world right now, where a virus is ravaging the entire world, I made our arbitrary list, our top three post-apocalyptic or disaster worlds of fiction.
Yes.
All right. Why don't you go first, John?
I'm going to do one of mine, the first one. It's actually a book that I recommended a little while ago, and that is the Silo series. The first one is called Wool. It's a three-book series where basically, civilization as we know it has kind of been forced into these silos underground. I won't get too far into it just because I did kind of just talk about it an episode or two ago, I believe. But it's good stuff if you're looking for some reading to do. There's also a graphic novel, I believe, of the first book, which I haven't read, so I can't say whether or not it's any good or not. But the novel itself is pretty good. You can get it in all sorts of forms. It's, you know, digitally, all that stuff, because, you know, this is the 21st or whatever the hell century. So, yeah, go get you some books. Well, the Silo series. Good stuff.
My recommendation, my first one, I'm going to recommend a post-apocalyptic world in the video game world. And I think if there was ever any video game series that did justice to a post-apocalyptic world while maintaining a great sense of humor about it, it would be the entire Fallout world. Fallout started out as a various video game. They've had many different incarnations, as well as a massive multiplayer version of it as well. But nothing's better than just going through the wastelands and just seeing the humical way that they portray what the future was like before it was destroyed, and now what's like after it's destroyed. But the Fallout video games all are very great. If you have any major console or if you have Steam, you can download almost all the games on there. I think they're all available on GOG as well, if I remember. But Fallout, the main linking premise is that there's people, the nuclear war comes and people go underground into vaults, which if you have the ability to pay for it, you live in the vault. And generations are born and die in the vault until some reason your protagonist has to leave the vault. And then from there, You're usually embarking on some sort of overarching mission to do something important, and you meet a lot of people on the way. So Fallout, that's one of my favorite post-apocalyptic worlds.
Yeah, as I was researching this, there were quite a few of them that were like all video game stuff, and I haven't played a whole lot of, you know, the top tier video games like that one, BioShock, and several others. So none of mine are video games. My next one up is kind of going to have a caveat. I'm going to go with like the Matrix world. And the caveat being that it's just, I don't think it satisfactorily ended up. I mean, you know, we all know that basically the first one was pretty dang good and had lots of potential. I think that's kind of where I'm going with this, is that there's a lot of potential there. I think they didn't quite fulfill, you know, well, I shouldn't say they didn't quite, they flat out did not fulfill that potential in the next two movies. Some of the ancillary stuff was a little bit more interesting, like the, what was it called? The Animatrix, I think, had some really cool stuff in there. And I think it's something that could be fleshed out more. But it just, I think in that first movie there, the potential that they had with this, you know, war with the machines and humans are, you know, basically slaves of the machine was kind of an interesting concept, even if in the movies itself, they didn't quite fulfill it to its full potential.
I think the Matrix's main benefit and problem is that in the first movie, it kept it simple. What if world, what is reality, and what do you, you know, what do you do when you think what's real isn't really real? And, you know, it was an interesting premise. I think where the other two movies killed it, especially the second one, the second movie was just so over dialogued and preachy about trying to establish this like whole weird philosophy about it. And it just overcomplicated the whole process itself. I totally agree. I think the first one was the amazing amount of promise, and I think it's because you didn't need to know how the magic happened. It just happened. The second movie's like, no, we're going to tell you how the magic happened, and then now the trick not only felt ruined, but just felt stale after that.
Yeah, quite unfortunate. So that could have been like, you know, one of the all-time classic trilogies in, you know, movie history, but kind of went down the toilet.
All right. One of my second favorite post-apocalyptic or disaster worlds of fiction, I'm going to say it's the Walking Dead universe. Now, I'm just going to stick to the comic, none of the TV shows or any of the spinoffs. But I feel the one thing that Robert Kirkman always did amazingly well with the Walking Dead comic series was he nailed it in the sense that, yes, the zombies are an overall arcing problem. But the real menace is human. What do people do when society breaks down and there's not the laws and rules that keep your behaviors in check? And a lot of the, I think, best story arcs of The Walking Dead deal with the moral quandaries that how far do you go? What's the line that you're willing to cross to make a better future? And once you do that, are you willing, able to live with what you've done in order to move on to that future as well? So,
yeah.
192, 193 issues is how many issues that whole series ran. But I always felt that the overall moral, arcing moral story of how humans dealt with a zombie world was much more interesting than the zombies themselves.
Yeah, I had Walking Dead and also kind of just zombie stuff in general as my list as well. I think the thing with Walking Dead is you kind of see Rick kind of progress from being this. He starts out as this, no, we can't do that. And he kind of progresses almost to turning into like the thing that he was fighting against a lot of time, where he just gets more and more extreme as the times go on and on and the threats get bigger and bigger.
And so you get to the point where Rick becomes then a symbol of optimism and hope, but he's still trying to shape the world around him to come around to his level of thinking that there is a future and you can go back to the way it was.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see like how the TV shows end up finishing everything off with Rick being spun into these movies. I mean, that could go a couple different ways. You know, it could be really cool or it could also be just a train wreck.
Couldn't care less. I've given up on the slog that's the TV series long, long ago, and there's still people out there enjoy it. Hey, power to you, man. But once you lose so much of your television star power, and I mean, right now, the storyline that they're getting into right now in the current, you know, regular Walking Dead is very close to what the end of the comic series got to. But I don't know what the end game is, given how many characters have left the show.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see how they play it all out, if they end up taking it all the way to the end and they just stop it, or if they stop it before that, or what they end up doing with it.
So your next one then was The Walking Dead, so do I go again then? Or
it was. I've got one other one, though, because I think we did three. I had four down on mine, yep, just in case. I went with Snowpiercer for my last one.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I don't have a whole lot to say about it. If you don't know the premise of that, basically, I think they kind of lead you with it. Go ahead.
I would say this. I don't even want to spoil if you've never seen Snowpiercer before, but I think the simplest way to do it is, what if you had to live in one perpetual life and in one thing that, like, a constant thing, and there's different classes of people that live on this thing, and it's when you realize, hey, what it is, what it takes to get to the good life, and you realize, is it really that good?
Yeah, it's got a lot of really interesting stuff in there, and I know they're making a TV show now, which I'm kind of curious to see how that goes, and you know, if that's a different adaptation, or if it's another part of that world, or what it is. But yeah, if you haven't seen Snowpiercer, it's great stuff with, you know, Chris Evans and I can't even think of who else is in there, but
William Hurt.
Yeah.
William Hurt, Ed Harris, what's her name? She's nutty as shit.
Yeah, the one with the glasses.
Tilda Swinton.
There you go. But yeah, it's great stuff, mildly disturbing, but worth your time if you haven't, you know, if you're sitting at home, go check out Snowpiercer. And it's, you know, but kind of some quarantine stuff in there too, so oddly appropriate.
Yeah, hey, you just kind of cut out there in the end.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, no worry, we got your main point through. So the last fictional world that I would praise and tout, it was probably actually, my first or second experiences with post-apocalyptic world. I mean, the 80s, there was a lot of just weird sci-fi stuff, you know, and you could sit there and say the Terminator universe, or you could sit there and say there was the Road Warrior. And I think the Road Warrior, that universe falls my number four, if, you know, I were to, you know, say what was outside of number three. But I think one of the first things I read, which I think completely just mirrors, I think, what we're going through right now in so many different ways, minus a few aspects, it's Stephen King's The Stand. It was one of his first early books he wrote back in the late 70s, and he eventually released a version which was an unabridged version of the book itself, and added about 600 pages of stuff, which really did add quite a lot of good stuff to the book itself. But essentially it deals with that there was a virus in a top secret lab. It accidentally got released because of just security breakdowns, and somebody got out, and it kills about 90% of the world's population. And it deals with how the survivors deal with being the survivors. How do you rebuild society? As well as overarching themes that there's two individuals, one representing good and one representing evil, that start calling people to join up with them. Then it turns into almost like a good versus evil kind of story. But I think The Stand has always been one of my favorite Stephen King books, probably number two right behind it. But give it a read right now. You'd be kind of interested to see how certain levels of ignorance or arrogance sometimes can lead to the worst of situations.
Yeah, I had a feeling that was going to make your list. I just looked it up as you were talking. The audiobook for The Stand is 47 hours and 47 minutes.
Well, the book itself, like the hardcover, I think is like 1,500 pages.
Yeah, it's a beefy boy.
It's a good one. So that covers the recommendations. Let's move into the main topic of the podcast. Is we didn't really announce it at the top of the episode. And I think part of it is this, is that I would say the theme of this episode is the Corona Blues, Life in a Contagious World. It's a lot has happened over this past month where, and it's not just, I just want to make very clear, it's not been the past month that this has happened. This has been going on for months. It's only impacted our life here in the United States very strictly over the past month itself. And that's the COVID-19 virus that has much of the country on various forms of lockdown, strict rules, or it's caused, you know, many deaths and illnesses and quarantines because of everything that's happening at this point. I mean, it's for the past month, part of like the past couple of weeks on and off has been just trying to find an effective way to record our podcasts again. And we found a way and method of doing that. But part of it too, I mean, I don't know about you, John, but for me, I've been busy, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those weird things. Like you see on Facebook and social media, everybody's like, you know, they're like, I'm in quarantine and I've been rewatching all the stuff, and how people are coping with being cooped up in their house. And like, for me personally, like I'm an essential employee. I work at a assisted living place where I'm the culinary director. So I'm in charge of everybody's food and, you know, everybody in my building still has to eat. So I'm still putting out crazy hours and my wife she's working from home, but she's still working. And so our life hasn't changed all that drastically, you know. I mean, we're kind of fortunate in that way that we don't have to worry about now not being employed or anything like that. You know, our life hasn't changed too much. The kids are home now, obviously, from school. I'm pretty sure they're not going to go back the rest of the year, but you know, that's an adjustment we can make. And, you know, luckily we have her mom staying here with us. So that's, again, something that we can deal with relatively easy. It's been an adjustment, of course, but I mean, it's been an interesting last month, like you said.
And I think, you know, to cover just what the origins of a lot of this is, the COVID-19 virus, a lot of people have stated has originated in China in the Wuhan area. Now, once again, I don't want this podcast to be a conspiracy podcast. I don't want this podcast to be one where, you know, I'm trying to pit sides one versus another politically itself. I think there's things I will call out and say, like right now, the virus originated in China. There's some people who sit there and say conspiracy theorists are like, well, they created it in a lab and it got out. Well, could be the case. You know, there's others that, including just dumb lawmakers, who have said, well, that's because they're eating bats and all these things that are causing people, you know, to get the virus. And once again, that was the plot to the movie Contagion, okay? That's not, you know, the official known way how to do it. I would say that the Chinese government definitely handled this in the most piss-poor method possible by trying to downplay it as much as possible, and that's what led to the outbreak and how it's pretty much ravaged a lot of their systems there. And because of how they handled it, I don't think any of the rest of the world was as ready to equip to deal with it because they didn't know how bad things were going to get. So
go ahead. Like you said, they're you know, the way they handle it and the way they kind of came out on this, I think they downplayed it because they didn't want themselves to look bad, which kind of made everybody else kind of go, oh, this is just another SARS or another, you know, avian bird flu or whatever. It's going to, you know, be a little bad and we should take it seriously, but it's not going to be anything as major as ended up to be. So I think them trying to save face probably cost the rest of the world a little bit, you know, in reaction time and everything.
Well, and I think the thing that frustrates me the most is that there's people that did at first, you know, downplay it. And even in the United States, there was many of our news outlets, Fox News, that downplayed and said that, oh, this is just a hoax and it's just something that's a political tool to try to, you know, attack the president. No, it wasn't. I've seen and met people. There's people I've worked with that sat, like a guy I met who's like, oh, it's just a cold, another version of flu itself. I read the real truth on Page 6 on Google and that said, I'm like, oh, shut the fuck up. I mean, here's the thing. It is a virus. It is something that we don't have a vaccine or cure for right now. And, you know, a lot of people that, you know, have pulled up things like, oh, well, what about SARS or what about, you know, this virus or that virus? And this many people died. I think what people don't get is that, yes, we've had previous, you know, pandemic outbreaks in the past 2 decades. But the total number of people that died from those pandemics, that's right now what we only currently have. We've exceeded that at this point in only a matter of just 1 to 2 months at this point. And I think that's what people don't realize is, yes, all those deaths happen over the course of a year. And we're talking a couple of months that many people.
Yeah, and they're saying it hasn't even peaked yet. Like, we haven't even gotten to where it's going to be the worst yet.
Right. This is truly, I think, a life-altering thing that we are going and experiencing at this point. You know, people are mad like, well, you know, they shut down all these bars and restaurants and they shut down, you know, sports and they shut down this. And like, listen, I don't think you get it. They can shut down our lives if we don't properly handle this. And there's people I know that, you know, were skeptical at first about it until they've kind of now seen the light and like, yeah, this is a really scary thing at this point. And so, you know, I think the best way to start out, you know, how this, you know, podcast and what this is, it's like, when this first started coming out, it was about the first week of March is when really the shit started hitting the fan. Starting on my end here, I was just as like the stories were starting to come out about the virus becoming a major issue in the United States and was already severely affecting like Seattle as an example and starting to affect New York and other areas. That's when I went on a vacation of Hawaii, an amazingly stress-free vacation.
Yeah, no kidding. That's some bad timing, unfortunately.
I mean, I was in Hawaii when everything, like, over a matter of a weekend went from, yeah, it's not a big deal. I mean, my wife was watching Fox News, and they're downplaying everything. And she's like, I don't think that they should be saying this. This sounds actually very serious. And sure enough, a few days later, you know, that's when the NBA then shut down. And that's when I'm like, oh, shit, this is not a good thing. I mean, they shut down an entire major sports franchise. The NHL followed. I mean, a matter of a week, me being in Hawaii, my biggest fear and concern is I hope I can get home. And not only that, I'm at a touristy Disney resort in Hawaii where people are here from all over the world. I'm like, I'm going to get the death virus, aren't I?
Yeah, I mean, these are just, you know, I can't even imagine maybe being stuck in that situation. Like, you know, you're, like you said, you're over there and, you know, am I going to get home? Are we going to bring it with us? Do we already have it? It's, you know, I couldn't even imagine just being stuck in it. And it's not like you could have you know, it happened while you were there. Like you said, you could have canceled it the week before. I mean, it's, you know, you kind of got stuck in the middle of it, unfortunately.
Right. I mean, it was like about a day or two before I got home that we started hearing about, like, you know, on the main side of the States where, like, grocery stores are just getting flooded and bombarded. And you had, like, you know, all these people starting to hit panic mode and toilet paper hoarding. So when our flight finally left and we were going to get home, I was never more relieved than when I finally got back into Minnesota. Like, because our flight had a layover in Los Angeles, bad enough as is, because that wasn't a good place to be during this whole thing as well. So, you know, we go through there, get home. And the first thing I did when I got home that Saturday of that week was I went to the grocery store. I went to my wife, like, I need to go buy supplies now because I don't know how bad this is going to get. And I kind of smartly did so. I think I got ahead of the curve. I went to, like, one of the local butcher shops and I bought a couple hundred bucks worth of meat and stuff to put in the freezer. Because the thing that sucked for me is that before we left for the vacation, we ran our freezer empty. It's like, let's run our stocks down so we can unplug the freezer. We'll let empty out most of the fridge. So we had no food at home. So I got lucky and I was able to get ahead of the curve and buy a bunch of things that fortunately we've been able to be fine in terms of supplies and materials, you know, and with all the panic buying and everything. But that was the first weekend back. And then we found out that school was being, their spring break for our kids was being extended by a couple of days. I'm like, they're not going back to school.
Yeah. I remember when they, you know, I think they canceled ours 2 weeks before the spring break. So like in the early March, it was like, you know, yeah, the kids aren't going back until, you know, maybe April 6th. And we were, you know, my wife, my mother-in-law and I were all just like, yeah, they're probably not going to go back this year if they're canceling 2 weeks just like that. And so, you know, that's when they started talking about distance learning, you know, with doing all the remote type of stuff that they just started yesterday. And yeah, it was like, yeah, that's probably not going to happen. They're going to be homeschooled the rest of the year.
Yeah. My kids did start a distance learning last week, and fortunately, I work on the weekends, and unfortunately, I'm an essential employee, meaning I'm a merchandiser. I go from grocery store to, you know, retail store stocking shelves, and it's not been an anxiety-free life for me. I mean, it's been weird. Like, you know, I would say, like, a few weeks ago when I first came back and started working, the stores were busy but empty is the best way I can put it. You know, there was people that were there, the lines were large and everything, but it was also eerily empty in some ways because everything else seemed shut down. And this past weekend, I kind of got frustrated because the stores were 3-4 times busier than I've seen them. Everybody was wearing masks too. And because the CDC said, hey, you know, it's not going to hurt to wear masks, at least helps prevent spreading to others. So I saw about over 60% of most people shopping wearing masks. But I'm like, but here's the problem. Now everybody thinks, well, I got a mask. I can go out now. Like for us, where we live in Minnesota, and we had a stay-at-home order. And at this point, there's almost all states have a stay-at-home order except for about 5 or 6 of them at this point. Ironically, most of them surround Minnesota.
Weird jerks.
So tomorrow is our governor is going to probably extend our stay at home. He's going to modify the rules to try to loosen up some. I mean, the one thing I would say that's good about Minnesota, a lot of people have criticized our governor because of, you know, how he's shut down so many different things and trying to do the stay at home. But we also have the least amount of infections per 100,000 people and have the best state in that sense. So I feel it's doing some things, but you still, like, I was at a park yesterday or a couple days ago riding a bike through just to unwind. There's about 20 kids at the skate park, and I'm like, yep, those are the little things right there that are going to cause us to fail or lapse back into this kind of dumb shit.
Yeah, it's kind of like those memes that first came out, like, you know, hey, if nothing happens and it looks like we overreacted, you know, that's the point, you know, like we're supposed to overreact so that way, you know, less people die, we get less infections and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm all about, like, just, you know, stay at home unless you absolutely have to. If you're an essential person, you know, don't, you know, we've gone for a couple of walks, but we haven't gone to any parks or anything like that just to get the kids out of the house. But, you know, just overreact if, you know, the better part of valor.
And that's part of it is it's just been weird. I mean, being at home this much now, everybody's like, well, that's good. There's so many things you can watch streaming. Like, nope, I'm around my kids nonstop at this point. You know, I'm sitting there trying to help them with their homework. You know, I'm trying to help them with all the things that they're doing. Going to work has become stressful. A few weeks ago, it was completely bad. Like, each week, my job has a new restriction they put in place. Like, before, like, I used to go into the plant, we'd bid for our routes. Now we bid from our cars remotely from our phones. Now we're not even supposed to go in and, like, only these circumstances. Now they're going to start distributing masks to us, like, starting this week. So each week it's just getting stricter and stricter.
Yeah, and mine's been the same way, which, as you can imagine, you know, working in an assisted living place with seniors, I mean, we've been for we started the third week where we've done entirely, instead of them coming down to the dining room, it's been all room delivery. So, you know, I had to relearn how to do that aspect of my job. And then it's, you know, then a week after that, it was okay. Everybody has to have, you know, who enters the building has to have their temperature taken, you know, and only people entering were really like employees and, you know, essential visits. Like if people needed some kind of health service or something like that. So it was, everybody's getting their temperature taken. And if you temp over, you know, I forget what the threshold was, then you're not allowed in. Late last week, it was now everybody has to wear a face mask while they're at work, which, you know, not ideal when you're in a kitchen because it's hot and stuffy back there anyway, but, you know, it's what you got to do to keep everybody safe, especially considering we're, you know, culinary department, we're in contact with everybody in the building. So, you know, it's what you got to do to keep people safe. And luckily, they released a list of places where it's gotten into nursing homes and stuff like that. And luckily, we're not on that list, and hopefully we can stay off of it.
Yeah, it's, I think the hard thing is this, like everything that's happening right now, the one thing that I always keep seeing in headlines and articles is, when do things go back to normal? I think normal is going to be a very fluid thing for the next 2 years at this point. Because a good example is this, is that, you know, I was talking to Jen and it's like, I'm just frustrated. You know, I just starting to get stir crazy. It says, I would love to go to a concert, or I'd love to go to a sports game, or, you know, I'd love, you know, like a baseball game, or, you know, do this. But then I sat there and realized, when would I feel comfortable doing that? Like, I know, as an example, if they were to say, hey, tomorrow baseball season's going to go on as usual, and I know there's going to be people that are going to flock to the, you know, the baseball game regardless of what's going on. But we're still like 9 months, if not more or less, away from getting a vaccine for this.
Yeah, I think we're a way, you know, we're a ways out from seeing the end of the worst of it, I think. You know, I think, and one thing I think people will surprise you with is their, you know, their ability to forget things like this. You know, I think it won't be long before, you know, once they really raise restrictions and stuff, people will be, like you said, flocking to baseball games and concerts and stuff. But I think some of the more lasting things will be some things like, you know, maybe businesses will realize, you know, hey, maybe we don't need to have an actual physical building, or at least not near as a big one. We can have people work from home remotely. You know, that actually worked fairly well, and that can be maybe a perk that they offer to people or something like that, you know, work from home and, you know, something to try and attract people, because, you know, I mean, a lot of businesses are still doing stuff, and, you know, like government and, you know, all sorts of places are letting people work from home, and it seems to be working okay. It's probably not ideal, but it's, you know, they're making it work. And, you know, that's just one aspect. I think there's a lot of other things that will come from this that'll be more subtle, that, you know, we'll see people change their ways and, you know, the way we do things and, you know, the future going forward.
Well, and I think the biggest thing, and I think it's one of the most unfortunate things, is how many businesses don't open back up at this point? I mean, you have to feel and believe at this point that there's businesses that we love and cherish that aren't going to be able to recover from this. Like I'm not even talking restaurants. Restaurants right now, they're not even staying probably afloat with a lot of the curbside or like taking orders and doing switching to takeout style business. It's something that's maybe slowing the bleeding, but they're still bleeding pretty hard at this point. And it's just,
oh yeah. I mean, their profit margins are razor thin on it, you know, on a good day for restaurants.
I mean, I think about the fact that, you know, you used to work for, you know, I won't say the place out loud, just you worked for a major national restaurant chain, and it was at the Mall of America, and the Mall of America shuts down, and obviously that place shuts down as well, too. You know, you sit there and think, what if you were working there still? What would have happened to you? I mean, you know,
yeah,
what's happened.
That was, yeah, that was something, you know, my wife would mention, you know, just before they shut down the restaurant, she was like, it's a good thing, you know, as many hours as I'm putting in now and as hard as it's been, she's like, at least, you know, you have a job, because if you had a restaurant, who knows, you know, if you still would. And there's a lot of friends of mine who don't, you know, but, you know, at the place that I formerly worked at, you know, heck, I brought two into come work with me at the place I'm at now as temporary workers, just kind of try and help out who I can, because we still need people and they need money. So it's, you know, it's tough out there.
But I think that's the hardest thing is, like, in situations like ours, you know, our jobs are not easy right now. We're stressful jobs. We're dealing with the public in mass ways. We're dealing with being heavily potentially exposed to getting sick. And nonetheless, the flip side of the coin is there's others out there. There's hundreds of thousands of people right now filing for unemployment right now that need a job itself. And so it's that weird mixed thing. It's like, well, I'm going out there, I'm working, I'm risking my life. On the other hand, what's the alternative? I mean, for me,
it's kind of a double-edged sword. Like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
Right. You know, I don't want to sit there and say, oh, poor me having a job and everything that, you know, exposes me and potentially gets me sick, when there's people out there who don't have a job, and that's just it. What would you rather do? Be worried about how you're going to make ends meet, or, you know, the mounting debt, or getting sick and possibly being a statistic where you hopefully are on the right side of the statistic where, hey, you know what, I'm going to live versus no.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough.
So yeah, it's been a very weird week or so, you know, a couple of weeks or so. You know, I don't think my kids are going back to school, obviously. But right now, our school district said, you know, March 6th is when, you know, the target date is to see, you know, reevaluate, they'll go back to school. No, they won't. Let's be clear. I'll be very interested to see, you know, what school looks like in the fall.
Yeah, exactly. What kind of, you know, I mean, you would think maybe by the fall they'd be able to go back, but at the same time, that's kind of when they're saying it's supposed to peak again is in the fall. So, you know, maybe they start out the year, you know, delayed, or maybe they do something completely different and schools end up doing some kind of shortened year. You know, who knows what they end up doing? It'll be, you know, we'll find out down the line, I guess.
That's the trick right there. I mean, it's like, all right, everybody's like, oh, I can't wait till they like lift the stay at home and can go out and do things. All right. But by doing that, that once again increases the risk of illness. And I don't know.
That was the thing. Like, when he announced the, you know, our governor announced the stay at home thing, I looked at everything and I was like, so basically this is everything we should have been doing anyway, except for like non-essential employees can't go to work now. But, you know, it's pretty much just stuff that people should have been doing anyway. It's just now the governor's basically saying, no, now you have to do it, because it's like, you know, come on, people, let's be smart about this.
Yeah. I mean, I would say this, there's been some parts of the United States where I would say the local, state, federal governments have done an exemplary job of getting ahead of this. I would say our federal government has completely dropped the ball on this in so many different ways. I feel that our president did a horrible disservice by just downplaying the severity of this from the start, until I think it started catching up, like, oh shit, yeah, people are going to die from this. And he realized, you know, you can't talk your way past this. But even now, he's being very optimistic. And I think that's a hard thing. People, you don't want to sit there and not, like, give people hope. But you got to be smart about giving them the right amount of hope, or a realistic goal of hope itself. Going to people like, yeah, this is going well, we'll be out of the woods in, you know, no time. You don't know that.
Yeah, right? I think that's the trick. I think it's like what you said, is you have to give them hope, but you have to give them realistic hope that, you know, things are going to get harder before they get better. You know, they will get better, but, you know, but we're not there yet.
I think the biggest thing I've hated hearing from a political standpoint is that there's so many different, especially older senators and congressmen, are like, well, what's, you know, we got to risk people's lives because if we don't have the economy, our country falls apart. Listen, our country has already been in a pretty shitty condition for a while from a financial standpoint. I mean, our debts, our national debts have always been continually growing and becoming an issue itself. So this is where we realized it's almost being like a person that's got like 8 maxed out credit cards and like, well, can we max out a 9th credit card and hoping that somebody's going to give us the credit to be able to do this? And you know, I was talking to a few people. I haven't even looked at mine, but like some people I know, they're like, yeah, but my 401k has dropped like 25% in the past month and a half.
Yeah. Somebody I was at work with was just saying the same thing. Like, yeah, it's just tanked. And yeah, it's not a good time for that sort of thing, unfortunately.
I haven't done that. My argument is, if anybody worrying about that, let's not worry about retirement yet. Let's worry about getting to retirement first. And then we can probably,
no kidding,
have a more accurate idea. And I don't want to be, I know I myself tend to be very pragmatic and sometimes cynical about things, but I'm also trying to be a lot more realistic about things. I don't like to blow smoke up my own ass and like sit there like everything's going to be perfectly fine, Mike. But on the other hand, it's like, you know what? The potential is there for things to be fixed. But the problem is that there's so many things that aren't in our own control that we can't do. You know, do it as we can contribute to our point, and that is, hey, don't go out, don't get people, other people sick, minimize exposure. If you think you're sick, self-quarantine yourself, and if the symptoms get worse, and you know, go and get tested. I personally hope they get this whole testing thing figured out. They got to get a way to start testing in higher mass at this point.
Yeah, that's one thing that's going to be the downfall of, you know, if anything, is just not knowing who has it.
You just cut off there. I hope you.
Damn it.
Yep. You said who had it and everything. Yeah, right now, recording remotely, I'm so used to having like John like on this other sofa right here with a microphone to him and everything. Now it's just empty, and I just have John remotely in his own house. I got to upgrade his microphone, apparently. And
yeah, you know, growing pains of learning to do this remotely instead of in person.
Well, we may have to start doing it more remotely in the future.
Yes, that's more news for, I don't know, now or another podcast.
Yeah, we'll do a Dex podcast. It's an arbitrary one.
Yes, tune in for the future, folks.
Cliffhanger, dun-dun-dun-dun. So, yeah, I mean, over the past couple of weeks, I mean, when I have had free time, the couple hours a day when my kids are asleep and like play some video games, watch some TV. I haven't watched that Tiger show yet.
Neither have I. It's kind of one of the, I'm sure I will at some point just to see the flaming dumpster fire of a train wreck that it is, but I haven't gotten around to watching it yet.
No, I have like started watching some things and I don't know. We can maybe save the next episode of like some of the things we've been doing in the meantime. But I think part of it, this is kind of just the, hey, we're getting the wheels back on the podcast again. And, you know, it's just more or less, hey, we're still here.
We're here, people.
Podcast. It's just that we're now trying to work around a lot more obstacles at this point.
Yes, we're figuring it out, everybody, but we're still here for you.
Yep. So, I don't know. I think it's like a good place to wrap it up.
Yeah, that should work.
All right. Well, hey, we do appreciate anybody that has weathered the pause and was eagerly looking forward to our next episode. Hey, here it is. We'll try to get more episodes done on a regular basis. Who knows? Now that we're recording remotely, maybe we can get more episodes done because, hey, stay-at-home order. What else are we going to do?
No kidding. Yes, stay at home and record podcasts.
So I just want to say to everybody that listens, please do everything you can. Be safe. Be smart. Don't take unnecessary risks. I know it's going to be frustrating, but, you know, eventually we'll get through. And paraphrase my favorite Nine Inch Nails song, way out is through. Sometimes you just have to go through what you have to go through. And it's kind of like the mentality I've always had, like when I've had a, you know, have a dental procedure done. it's painful and annoying, but the only way it's going to happen is you have to go through it. Just deal with it as it is.
Yes, good words, but yes, we will get through this, everybody.
All right. So thank you for joining us. Please join us again in the future.
Yes, we'll be here for you.
Goodbye, everyone.
Have a good one.